This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan. We're broadcasting today from the Knight Studio at the Museum, a museum devoted to journalism and news located just off the National Mall here in Washington, D.C. Barack Obama's former pastor thrusts himself back into the presidential campaign. The Supreme Court says states can require voters to show a photo ID. Voters in North Carolina and Indiana go to the polls in 6 days, but they will not hear the Democrats' debate beforehand. Hillary Clinton goes into the lion's den with Bill O'Reilly, and Al Franken's Senate bid hits a pothole. It's Wednesday, and time for this week's Fix with the Political Junkie.
There you go again.
My name is Geraldine Ferraro.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
I'm John Kerry, and I'm reporting for duty.
But I'm the decider.
Every Wednesday, NPR political editor Ken Rudin joins us for the latest on the presidential race and other political news. The big news, of course, is Senator Obama's decision to cut ties with his former pastor. We'll focus on that a bit later in the program. First, with Obama supporter Congressman Mel Watt and Clinton backer Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee. Then we'll talk with political analyst Ron Walters about the effect on black, white, and Hispanic voters. But first, we'll catch up on the week's political news. If you have questions about the Indiana voter ID law, the upcoming primaries in North Carolina and Indiana, or Al Franken's taxes, give us a call, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. Ken Rudin joins us here at the museum. Hey, Ken, and you're back with a trivia question.
I have one today. Today, as you well know, Neil, today's the 17th anniversary of when Paul Tsongas declared his candidacy for president. Who was the last Democratic senator from Massachusetts, elected senator of Massachusetts, not to run for president?
If you know the name of the last Democratic senator from Massachusetts not to run for president, call 800-989-8255 or email us again. That's talk@npr. Not Ed Brooke.
No, he's a Republican.
Aha, okay.
But did not run for president either. That's right.
Now, Barack Obama did yesterday what a lot of people thought he should have done sooner, break with his former Senator Jeremiah Wright. How is this going to affect things, do you think, in Indiana and North Carolina?
Well, obviously, he had to have gotten to a point where he felt he had no choice, because Jeremiah Wright had been the topic of conversation of the campaign for days. He had done Reverend Wright had done a trifecta, appearing at with Bill Moyers at the NAACP in Detroit, and of course at the National Press Club, where his performance, I don't know how else to describe it, really became a distraction for the Obama campaign. So obviously it was tough for him to, you know, when he spoke that eloquent speech in Philadelphia last month about race and racial healing, he went out of his way not to break from Reverend Wright. This time he felt he had no choice.
We're going to be talking more about this with Representatives Watt and Sheila Jackson Lee, but 6 days to go. This is obviously bad news.
Well, it is, and obviously there's a perception, at least in Washington, that Hillary Clinton is on the ascendancy, even though Barack Obama, since his 9-10-point loss in Pennsylvania, has been picking up more superdelegates than she has. He's picked up 9, including several today and yesterday, and she has about 5 or 6 since then. So that's interesting. For all the amount of attention and good headlines she got out of Pennsylvania, he's still picking up more and more delegates. But obviously, there's nervousness about the numbers. There's a sign that he may be declining somewhat in North Carolina, where he's had a double-digit lead for the longest time. And of course, the last poll I saw was a week ago in Indiana, where he was up by 5. That may have narrowed in the wake of the Wright controversy.
And one of the superdelegates that Senator Clinton did pick up is the governor of North Carolina, not a shabby endorsement 6 days ahead of the primary.
That's true, but the two Democrats who are running to succeed him are both working for, have both endorsed Barack Obama.
Now, Senator Clinton tonight has accepted an invitation to talk with Bill O'Reilly. Two nights, in fact. She's going to be appearing. I guess they're going to tape it and run it two nights. This is a risk for her, no?
Well, actually, she's been in this situation several times in this campaign, meeting with the members of the vast right-wing conspiracy, and she's done okay. She met with Richard Scaife, the publisher of the Pittsburgh Tribune, mm-hmm. Who has been a longtime Clinton critic. He was the one who was funding all the Watergate and Monica Lewinsky stuff against the Clintons back in the early 90s. But she came away with an endorsement from that newspaper, which was pretty shocking. And it'll be interesting to see what Bill O'Reilly has to say about her.
Our guest is Ken Rudin, of course. He's NPR's political junkie, writes the political junkie column on NPR's website. I think we have a title for him. It's called Political Editor. Not the same title that a lot of people are using this week. Anyway, we have a call on our trivia question, and this is Ron. Ron with us from Utica, New York.
Yes.
Hi, Ron. Go ahead.
The answer is Senator Edward Brooke. He was defeated by Paul Tsongas in 1978.
Well, we talked about that earlier. Edward Brooke was a Republican. The question, of course, was who's the last Democratic senator from Massachusetts not to have run for president? Ed Brooke, of course, didn't run, but he was a Republican.
And Ed Brooke was also the nominee of Jim Duffy, who sent us an email. Thanks very much for the call, Ron.
Okay, thanks.
And this from another email, this from Judy, who says it's Ted Kennedy. Well, I know that Ted Kennedy did run for president in 1980. I was on his campaign bus.
Although he had trouble addressing that question to Roger Mudd in that famous question in 1979, but Ted Kennedy did run against Jimmy Carter in 1980 and took the battle all the way to the convention in New York, in Madison Square Garden.
Email from Nathan, who says the answer is David Walsh.
David Walsh is the correct answer. And this is, I mean, he was in the Senate from 19... I know. It's not often that David Walsh gets a standing ovation at Talk of the Nation, but David Walsh was served from 1926 to 1946. As you well remember, he was defeated by Henry Cabot Lodge.
Of course, yes.
But it was interesting. Every Democrat since then, John F. Kennedy, Ted Kennedy, John Kerry, remember him, and Paul Tsongas all ran for the presidency. So David Walsh is the answer. Now, actually, there was one more Democratic senator, Benjamin Smith III. He was the guy who was appointed to replace John F. Kennedy because Ted Kennedy was too young to hold the seat in 1962, so he was a seat warmer for a brief time.
Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Darren. Darren with us from American Falls in Idaho.
Yes, I just had a question. Whether or not you thought the press has been fair with Reverend Wright, we don't talk enough about this idea of right-wing pastor figures and their influence in the political process, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, thanks very much for the call. And this, of course, Reverend Hagee, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, has endorsed Senator McCain, and he's gotten into considerable trouble for that.
There is no question that there's been more focus on Reverend Wright and his relationship with Obama than Reverend Hagee and his relationship, or certainly his endorsement of John McCain. One of the reasons is that nobody's paying attention to John McCain. Somebody told me the other day that he is the likely Republican nominee.
I've heard that, yes.
So, no, but I mean, obviously there will be much more attention on him and Keating 5 and Hagee and all that stuff. But regarding that, I think that's part of the reason, because there's so much more attention on a very exciting campaign for the nomination and how this could affect it. And obviously it has affected it.
And indeed, Senator McCain has already asked the North Carolina Republican Party not to run this ad. And let's listen to it.
For 20 years, Barack Obama sat in his pew listening to his pastor.
And then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America. That's in the...
Now, Bev Perdue and Richard Moore endorse Barack Obama. They should know better. He's just too extreme for North Carolina.
And that plays as an ad in North Carolina's gubernatorial race.
Well, ostensibly, that's the reason the Republicans in North Carolina wanted to run it. They wanted to attack Richard Moore and Bev Perdue, the two Democrats who are running in the May 6th primary. But I'm just wondering if this ad may be outdated now, given the fact that, you know, before Barack Obama would not break from Reverend Wright, clearly yesterday changed everything like that.
Let's also talk about Al Franken, the running for the Democratic nomination for the United States Senate in the state of Minnesota, who's had problems in now 17 states. I'm not even sure that includes Minnesota.
Yeah, that's more states than Mitt Romney's from. What's interesting, he has a $70,000 tax bill. He hasn't paid back taxes. He said, well, look, you know, it's my accountant's fault, and I'll fess up and everything like that. But what's interesting is Al Franken, among the challengers running for Senate seats this year, he's probably the best financed Democratic challenger anywhere in the country. He'll be the likely nominee against Norm Coleman in Minnesota. Coleman had been a Bush supporter on the war for a long time until he broke with him this year. A very close race to watch, a toss-up in our rankings. We have a new Senate map on NPR.org that talks about all the Senate races. But Franken is getting a little bit bad publicity in the last couple of days.
And Florida and Michigan. Has the Democratic Party figured out what they're going to do with those delegates?
Well, no, they are having a meeting. The DNC is having a meeting on May 31st to try to do this. Obviously, for those who don't remember, and I'm sure everybody does remember,
of course,
both Florida and Michigan moved up their primary to January in violation of DNC rules. The Democratic National Committee said if you do that, you're stripped of all the delegates. They did it anyway. They stripped them of their delegates. The Republicans only stripped them of half the delegates. The campaigns, no candidate campaigned in Michigan or Florida. Hillary Clinton, along with Chris Dodd and Dennis Kucinich, were on the ballot in Michigan. Barack Obama was not. All the candidates were on the ballot in Florida. Again, no delegates were allotted. Hillary Clinton won both primaries pretty handily in January. But so now there's a solution. Obviously, Hillary Clinton wants the most delegates because she won the primaries. Barack Obama says, no, it should be split evenly because it didn't count. There's a new solution, a new suggestion out there that will give her about 10 more delegates than he in Michigan.
Uh-huh. I thought it was going to be the 48-state flag was the solution. Anyway, we have a question from here in the studio audience at the museum.
Hi, my name is Julia Moss. And you mentioned earlier that the North Carolina governor came out yesterday for Hillary Clinton. But what has been the trend since Hillary Clinton won the Pennsylvania primary in the superdelegate endorsements?
Barack Obama has actually done better than she has, and that's interesting. There's an article, the Senator Claire McCaskill from Missouri said that even though there are about 80 or so congressional delegates, superdelegates, who have not publicly announced their decision yet, she thinks most of them have. And the feeling, the understanding was that had Barack Obama done better than he did in Pennsylvania or even won Pennsylvania on April 22nd, a lot of these would have come out and endorsed Barack Obama. Obviously, it's tough for them to come out now that she seems to be on a roll of having won Pennsylvania. But even today, Barron Hill, the congressman from Indiana, has endorsed Barack Obama. Yesterday, Congressman Ben Chandler from Kentucky, which votes pretty soon. David Wu, a congressman from Oregon, which votes soon, also endorsed Obama. Now, of course, Hillary Clinton did pick up the endorsement of Mike Easley. She picked up a congressman yesterday in Missouri, Ike Skelton. It's running still for Barack Obama, maybe, 9-5 in the past couple of days. So he's still doing better than she is, even though she has been picking up the wins, and he's been getting the bad press.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for the question. It's Political Junkie Day. We're live in the Knight Studio at the museum here in Washington, D.C. And when we come back, Senator Barack Obama's pastor has burst into the news again. We'll talk about the fallout with Congressman Mel Watt and Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan, broadcasting today from the Knight Studio inside the museum in Washington, D.C. Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor, is here with us. It's Political Junkie Day, and we're discussing the Democratic presidential hopeful Barack Obama and his former pastor, the Reverend Jeremiah Wright. Back in March, Obama's connection to the Reverend Wright was scrutinized after tapes of some of the pastor's more incendiary comments surfaced on YouTube. Obama turned questions about Reverend Wright into a major speech on race. Among other things, he said he could no more disown the pastor than he could his own white grandmother.
The man I met more than 20 years ago is a man who helped introduce me to my Christian faith, a man who spoke to me about our obligations to love one another, to care for the sick, and lift up the poor. As imperfect as he may be, he has been like family to me.
Then on Monday, Reverend Wright broke his silence and defended his earlier remarks in an appearance at the National Press Club and characterized Senator Obama's reaction as mere politics. Senator Obama, yesterday at an emotional news conference, cut ties with his former pastor.
Yesterday, we saw a very different vision of America. I am outraged by the comments that were made and saddened over the spectacle that we saw yesterday.
The conflict between the two over race, politics, and perceptions of the two have become central to the Democratic nomination again. We want to hear from you. What's the fallout of the Wright controversy? Has this changed your mind? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. We'll also take questions from our audience here at the museum. You can join the conversation on our blog as well. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. And we're hoping to hear shortly from Representative Mel Watt, a Democrat from North Carolina, and also from Democrat Sheila Jackson Lee. She is from Texas. He supports Obama. She supports Hillary Clinton. In the meantime, let's see if we can get a caller on the line. And this is Jennifer. Jennifer, this is Duluth in Minnesota.
Yeah, my mind has not been changed by Reverend Wright's comments, both the ones from previous and now. I've been an Obama supporter for quite a while. What really is bothersome to me, I'm very sad about, is I think it magnifies that race is still a really a latent problem in this country. And you've got David Dukes out there who've been spewing this stuff for years and get elected, and you've got Robertson and Falwell, you know, and the vitriol about gays and other things. And yet when this happens, it just so hurts this candidate. It just, it's amazing to me, and I think it really shows there's a problem, and it's really quite a double standard. And I'll take my comments off the air, and thank you.
Jennifer, thanks very much for the call. Well, joining us now is Representative Mel Watt, Democrat from North Carolina, superdelegate for Barack Obama. And Congressman Watt, first of all, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you. You're having a very tough conversation today.
Well, it's a tough one, but it's one that's going on all over the country in various forms. And as you listen to what Jennifer had to say, do you think, first of all, that Senator Obama has been hurt by this controversy?
Well, I'm sure it's having some impact. You like to think that people can differentiate between what one person says and another person says and make the distinctions, but I'm sure there are some people who are saying that this is a reflection on Barack Obama and his candidacy. So we need to try to minimize that and hopefully eliminate it completely, but people will do what I think makes them feel comfortable in this situation.
Among the questions they may ask is, if the Reverend Wright's comments were outrageous yesterday, why weren't they outrageous a month ago?
Well, I think he took it to another level yesterday or over the weekend in a series of discussions. It's one thing to say something as an aberration in the context of a larger speech, but when you he himself is Reverend Wright, that is guilty of the same things that he was accusing the media of doing. He lifted out from the context of a speech and elaborated on something that was outrageous when, if said in the context of a speech, may not have been as outrageous. I don't think Barack has changed his position. It's Reverend Wright that has gone step three steps, four steps further than he did previously.
We have a question from here at the studio audience at the museum.
I'm Sam Gauthier. I'm a sophomore at American. And I'm just wondering, Obama's campaign, it seems to have done very little to mitigate the damage. The speech on race was great, but it was kind of obtuse. And I'm wondering, is Wright completely out of Obama's control? Is there any dialogue at this point between the two?
Can you give us an answer on that, Congressman Watt?
I don't know anybody who thinks that there's any dialogue going on between Barack Obama and Reverend Wright. If there were, probably the speech itself that Barack gave would have allowed this to go on off the front page and back to the campaign. But nobody could have anticipated that Reverend Wright would have come out and thrown kerosene on a fire that was virtually out.
You suspect the next communication is going to be a Christmas card?
I suspect so. Or maybe, you know, I don't know what the next communication is. You don't stop speaking to people, but clearly there is a growing rift, a major chasm between the Barack campaign and Reverend Wright at this point.
Thanks for the question.
Congressman Watt, when we first talked about the Obama candidacy as more of a dream or an idea a year and a half ago, we always knew that race would be in the background, but did we ever think that it could be an African-American, a fellow African-American, who could prove the end of the Obama campaign?
Well, I mean, Reverend Wright won't cast but one vote. We need to keep that in mind, and I suspect he will cast his vote for Barack Obama. I can't imagine him voting for anybody else if Barack is the nominee. So I mean it's, it, the 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 decisive votes will be cast by people in North Carolina, in Indiana, in all across America if Barack Obama is the nominee. So we shouldn't make this discussion about race only about Reverend Wright. Race has been a factor in American politics for years and years and years. That's why we have a Voting Rights Act, because people have historically voted along racial lines, and it's been a decisive factor in their vote. Now, we hope that that is minimizing, but remember, just last year, a year before last, we renewed the Voting Rights Act for 25 more years, anticipating that it would probably take that long for race to play itself out completely as a factor in American politics. So I don't want people to pass the buck and say we're going to blame this whole thing on Reverend Wright. He's the only factor here. People have free choice to decide and to determine whether race is still the major factor, a major factor, a diminishing factor, or no factor in this election year. And we shouldn't be passing the buck to Reverend Wright on that issue. We all have individual choices that we can make on that issue.
Yet, that's and you're absolutely right, but that's kind of the argument that Senator Obama put to us last month in his speech in Philadelphia. And what this subsequent controversy seems to have raised anew are questions about his judgment, how he could have sat there for 20 years and not known the man he thought he knew so well.
Well, I've been in the same church for 62 years, a country church out in on the outskirts of Charlotte, North Carolina. It would take a major set of circumstances to move me from my church. It's my church. I hear messages from pastors that sometimes I agree with, that sometimes use hyperbole, that go overboard. You know, I don't know that anybody can could have said 15 years ago you ought to get up and move from this church. There are major issues in the Catholic Church, in every church that that a majority of the people in the church sometimes disagree about. Nobody is jumping up who doesn't agree with the Pope on birth control or abortion or choice, saying, okay, you should jump up and move out of the church that you're a member of. I think we are overreacting here because this is a presidential campaign, and we are holding Senator Barack to a much, much, much higher standard than we would hold anybody at this juncture. And I think anybody who says differently, I think, is just is sidestepping some of their own insecurity about this.
Let's see if we get a caller in. And this is Amy. Amy with us from San Antonio, Texas.
Yes. I'm sorry. I can barely hear you guys.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to make a comment, and I thought this is a pretty interesting issue. I've been following the news for a while with the Reverend Wright thing, and I know that there's a lot of media coverage out there focusing on this one particular issue. But, for example, we don't tend to focus on the true issue here, which is the fact that at the Nevada convention, the GOP party walked out based on McCain and the fact that they weren't getting the vote that they needed. So I think that we should focus on the more important issues, which is the way people are voting is a lot different now, and that this piddly racism issue has nothing to do in the grander scheme of what we should really be focusing on, which is the issues. Thank you. I'll take my comments off the air.
All right. Thanks very much for the call, Amy. And, well, I'm certain that Senator Obama would like to switch the conversation to issues that he thinks are important for the country today.
I think we all would like to switch the issues back to the real kitchen table issues of the economy and the war and education and health care. This is a major distraction, and I'm not saying that race shouldn't be discussed. Obviously, we need to have an open discussion about race in this country and be honest about it, but we shouldn't do it in the context of some outrageous statement that any minister or any individual makes. It needs to be in a more reasonable setting and without the kind of glare that that the media and others have cast upon this issue.
It's Wednesday. We're with the political junkie, Ken Rudin, here at the Newseum. Our guest is Congressman Mel Watt, a Democrat from North Carolina and a supporter of Senator Barack Obama. We also invited Representative Sheila Jackson Lee to be with us. She is a Democrat from Texas and supports Hillary Clinton. Evidently, she could not make it to the broadcast. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Ken?
One quick comment regarding what Congressman Watt just said. Yes, Barack Obama is held to a higher standard, and I think he should be, because he's the first. He's making history, just as John Kennedy was held to a higher standard regarding the Catholic religion. Now we don't even think about what Catholics are running for president.
And Mitt Romney was.
And Mitt Romney, too. But I'm saying, so when you're first on that, you are fortunately or unfortunately held to this higher standard.
Do you think that's fair, Congressman?
Well, hold the person to a higher standard, but remember, Reverend Wright is not a candidate in this presidential election. And I don't know what else Barack could do at this point to further distance himself, sever the relationship, disavow, in this whatever perception people have that Reverend Wright has the super control over him. I think it's appropriate to hold Barack to a higher standard, and I think he meets that higher standard. But it seems to me that what we're doing now is saddling him with burdens of people who creates a different standard here. We've never saddled other political candidates with those kinds of burdens. Suppose President Kennedy had disagreed with the Pope on some issues. Would we be asking him to withdraw himself from the Catholic Church back in the middle of that campaign? I mean, it's just I agree that all presidential candidates have to be held to a high standard, perhaps a higher standard than anybody. But this isn't about Barack Obama anymore. It's about Reverend Wright, somebody that's not a candidate here.
Congressman, thanks very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mel Watt, a Democrat from North Carolina. He represents the 12th District there, a supporter, as you heard, of Senator Barack Obama. And again, we invited a supporter of Senator Clinton, Representative Sheila Jackson Lee, to be with us, and she obviously couldn't make it. But Ken Rudin, before you go, this presents both an opportunity and a quandary for Senator Clinton. Does she exploit this controversy?
Well, there are some people who say that she has been. There are comments made by her husband during the South Carolina primary. There was a comment by Bill Clinton just the other day who said that the Obama campaign and the media are playing the race card on him, you know, that they're using it on him. And, you know, that's Bill Clinton being Bill Clinton. But, look, I think it's beyond Bill Clinton's. But I think Hillary Clinton does have a comment to say. She could, look, at the last debate, if you remember, out of nowhere, she raised the name of Minister Farrakhan. Now, some people thought that that was playing the race card as well. Hillary Clinton does have a responsibility, as does Barack Obama, as does the media, into how to frame this issue. But certainly, we have not heard from her, and that's why I would have loved to have heard Sheila Jackson Lee today to talk about what the Clinton campaign has in mind for this.
Question might come up when Senator Clinton appears tonight with Bill O'Reilly.
And also, yes, absolutely true.
All right. Ken Rudin, thanks very much.
I'm not leaving, Neil.
You're not?
No, I'm staying here.
You're staying?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Worst person in the world, huh? All right. Ken Rudin, staying with us here in at the Knight Museum, the Knight Studio here at the museum. When we come back, we're going to continue talking about the controversy over Reverend Wright and Senator Obama. We'll be joined by Ron Walters, a distinguished leadership scholar and professor of government and politics at the University of Maryland. And he also knows a thing or two about politics besides that artful title. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. When Reverend Wright spoke at the National Press Club on Monday, he praised another controversial religious leader, Minister Louis Farrakhan, the head of the Nation of Islam.
So what I think about him, as I said on Bill Moyes and it got edited out, how many other African Americans or European Americans do you know that can get 1 million people together on the mall? He is one of the most important voices in the 20th and 21st century. That's what I think about him. I said, as I said on Bill Moyes, when Louis Farrakhan speaks, it's like E.F. Hutton speaks. All black America listens. Whether they agree with him or not, they listen.
Ron Walters is here with us to help us understand the impact of the racially charged controversy on this campaign. He's professor of government and politics at the University of Maryland, College Park, the author of Freedom Is Not Enough, Black Voters, Black Candidates, and American Presidential Politics. Nice to have you with us today.
Good to be with you, Neil.
And, of course, we still want to hear from you. Have the newest comments by Reverend Wright and Senator Obama's response changed your mind in any way? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Ron Walters, this has highlighted an issue we've seen over and over again in the last several weeks. Senator Obama does not do very well among many white working-class voters, and that's going to come up again as he goes into North Carolina and Indiana.
That's certainly true. When you look at what has already happened in places like Ohio and Pennsylvania, this is particularly important because some of the racially sensitive groups there have said that, when they vote, they take race into consideration. And when you look at the exit polls in Ohio, for example, it was about 20%. It's probably about 30% because social scientists know that people tend to understate their views having to do with race. So that about a third of the people in these elections have some sensitive feelings about race when they go to vote. Obviously, this means that they're going to vote probably against Barack Obama. So it is a question. It is a problem. And when you understand that about a third of most of the electorate is sort of blue-collar workers who have been under tremendous pressure with things like jobs and the living conditions and now their houses, there is considerable resentment there. I would go back to say bitterness.
You're going to stay away from Kling?
That's right. About their socioeconomic circumstances. And that is the kind of fodder. That is the kind of fuel that racism thrives on.
Hmm. Let's get a question from here in the audience at the museum.
Hi, my name is Katie Greer. I'm a student at American University, and I'm just wondering, obviously, most people would consider it to be a smart political move on Obama's part to cut ties with Reverend Wright at this point, but can you pinpoint any specific groups of people who will probably cut ties with Obama at this point as a result and not support him anymore after this controversy?
Well, thanks for that question from my alma mater. I think that, you know, the black community right now is conflicted because on the one hand, Reverend Wright has a lot of support in the black community. He's been around 30 years. He's nationally recognized. His church is a model for the kind of sort of ministries. He's got 70 ministries in that church. And so...
And for the last month, Senator Obama has asked people to rally around him.
Absolutely. And yesterday, there were 400 ministers at Shiloh Baptist Church here in Washington, D.C., supporting him. So he's got a lot of support. And so for those people who think, well, you know, this is about the black church, not a presidential candidate, some of those people feel very conflicted about this issue. And on the other hand, I've been on a lot of shows and I've heard a lot of comments from people who say, well, you know, he's messing up the chance for a black to be president of the United States for the first time, and we don't like it. The black community right now is split, and some of the people who think that the black church should be privileged may not vote for Barack Obama But I think that is probably going to be a relatively small population.
Let's get Greg on the line, and Greg's calling us from Raleigh in North Carolina.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air, Greg.
Yes, I just wanted to make a comment about the Reverend Wright issue. My question is, and it's kind of a vague question, but I don't understand how if someone like Reverend Wright can speak out like this about problems in America that he feels are problems in America, why doesn't he just move out of America?
Perhaps because he was born here and lived his whole life here.
Well, I understand that, but he's obviously very unhappy here, so why doesn't he move to somewhere else where he'd be happy?
Well, maybe he's just trying to make this country a better place, like a lot of us. Anyway, thanks very much for the call, Greg. and joining us now is Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee, a Democrat from Texas and a supporter of Hillary Rodham Clinton. And Congresswoman Lee, we'd hope to hear from you earlier, but better late than never. Nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you so very much. I'm delighted to be with you. You know the trials and tribulation of being on the Hill and working. I was in the middle of markup, and I rushed to be on air, and I know your listeners will find it humorous. I was rushing to the wrong studio, but you're so important that I've rushed back, and I thank you for your courtesies of extending a courtesy to me.
And markup, of course, is part of the legislative process, and not makeup. It's considerably different.
Thank you for correcting that, and in serious one, too, having to do with human rights issues and genocide as it relates to arms control. So maybe we'll come on and talk about that on another time.
But we wanted to ask you today about the controversy, obviously, that's facing Senator Obama with the Congress, his back and forth with Reverend Wright, and both the opportunity and the conundrum this presents to Senator Clinton. What does she do now?
Well, you know, first of all, this is a sad day, I'm sure. As it relates to Senator Obama, he made that known as we heard him speak on yesterday. Senator Clinton stays the course, and I applaud her for the tone and the demeanor and the actions that she's taken, frankly. She has stayed on message and on focus for North Carolina and Indiana, and I do believe that the question will be who is best prepared to lead this government and this nation amongst the many, as I said, trials and tribulations of now. And that is, of course, high gasoline prices. She's come out with a solution on a moratorium. It's not a permanent solution, but a moratorium for the summer on gas taxes. The whole idea, which is so very important to many of us in our congressional districts, real universal access to health care, bringing the troops home, and jobs, jobs, jobs. I've seen her in Pennsylvania. I think there's a connection going on now with Senator Clinton, as evidenced by the 50-34 that she's winning, the independent vote, the 9 points that she leads Senator McCain. Stay the course. And again, stay focused. Realize that this is a personal dilemma that your opponent is going through. We all have our personal dilemmas. This is no time to make use of that, because we all have our challenges. But it is time to show your focus, your leadership, and your connecting to the voters.
It was mentioned earlier in this broadcast that during the last debate, she will not get another one before the North Carolina and Indiana primaries, but in the last debate she did raise the name of Reverend Farrakhan, Minister Farrakhan, and would you expect that that might come up again tonight in her conversation with, for example, Bill O'Reilly?
Well, I think anything that comes up is with candidates is pursuant to a question, and certainly you would want anyone to answer their questions. All of the people that support Senator Clinton probably have different views on a lot of things that she says, but her answers come pursuant to questions. She answers from the heart. She answers truthfully. But at the same time, there's no doubt that Senator Clinton embraces the rich diversity of this nation, the diversity of thought. She recognizes people have their opinions. She is clearly someone who doesn't run away from diversity, as evidenced by her participating in State of the Black Union with Tavis Smiley, a very well-thought-out message as she went to Memphis for the 40th anniversary. Senator Clinton will answer questions, but her message is to stay on course and to talk about the issues. That's what won the election in Pennsylvania. I saw the connectedness as individuals from all economic backgrounds and demographics were there in that state, reaching out, not on divisive issues, but they were reaching out toward her, shaking her hand, telling her about the fact that they voted for the first time in their lives or would be voting because they believe that she can solve their problems. You know, something else is working for Senator Clinton. People now like a fighter. For a woman, that's a challenge. But they like a fighter. They like someone who says, I'm fighting for you. And if I'm in the fight fighting for you and for this nation, you will have a better quality of life, and we will have a nation that we all can be proud of.
Congressman Lee, thanks very much for the time and making the effort to get to a phone line to join us on the program today.
Well, you're very kind. Thank you to all of your listeners as well.
Sheila Jackson Lee, a Democrat from Texas, and as you heard, a superdelegate who will be supporting Hillary Clinton come convention time. And Ron Walters is still with us from the University of Maryland. His book, again, Freedom Is Not Enough, Black Voters, Black Candidates, and American Presidential Politics. And I guess, Ron, one of the old rules of politics is if your opponent is messing up, the best thing to do is stay out of his way.
Yes, and that's very interesting because when you look at the fact that Hillary Clinton has not sort of commented on this, she's following that rule. On the other hand, of course, John McCain has. He's taken advantage of it. That gives you a hint as to what might happen this fall. Except that I think by this fall, given the fact that this is such a hot issue right now, it may be old news.
Let's see if we get another question from the audience here at the museum. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were lined up with a question there. We just have an overflow crowd, and they're standing in front of the microphone. I apologize for that. Let's see if we can go to the phones instead. We'll go to Barbara. Barbara with us from Miami in Florida.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, Barbara. Thank you.
I think it's too late for Senator Obama. He should have distanced himself when these excerpts first surfaced on TV news. I think the vitriol that has come out of Reverend Wright's sermons, I mean, I understand they might have been taken out of context, but there's no other way to view those statements, should have been reacted to in the beginning.
Yeah, Ron Walters, the other day in the National Press Club, Reverend Wright didn't say my remarks were taken out of context. He said, let me expand on some of those remarks.
Right, and he made it even worse. And unfortunately, you know, Senator Obama's platform, part of it has been to be someone for change. And for a minute there, I mean, it looked like he could do it, but I just can't believe that he didn't hear this stuff during the 20 years he was a churchgoer.
Mm-hmm. Ron Walters?
And so
could you hold on just a second, Barbara? We want to get a response from Ron.
Well, if he's like me, he didn't go to church every Sunday.
I know, but you yourself and, or someone on the panel said that, you know, the reverend's a very important reverend in the black church, and I'm sure that this kind of talk is something that's well known, not just to the parishioners, but among the leaders themselves of some of the churches. I heard that Oprah Winfrey wanted to be a member of the church, and she said, no way, I'm out of here. So,
We don't know that to be true, so as far as we know. But,
okay.
See if we get a response from Ron Walters.
Well, no matter how esteemed the minister, he was a state senator in Illinois, and he had a lot of things that I'm sure kept him from attending church every Sunday. So I would take him at his word for that. But I think that when you look at the fact that he is resoundingly rejected those words and put distance between himself and Reverend Wright, I don't know exactly what else he can do. The fact that he didn't do it earlier, I'm not sure that that washes. And I think that what we've done is we've put a lot of focus on Reverend Wright and on Barack Obama. We ought to put a little focus, and we ought to do what Barack Obama said about challenging American people. That tremendous speech on race was designed to do that, to ask people that they say to lay down racism at the feet and not carry it into the voting booth and not make it sort of the evaluation that they use. And so I think that it's very difficult to find, you know, how many people and so forth. And I've been asked that question, you know, how many people do you think are racist? I don't know. There's no way of telling because people hide behind all kinds of things. But I think that people ought to take seriously this challenge to lay this thing down, because this is a tremendous moment. Let me say one final thing, that I'm not on...
Oh, it's not going to be your final thing. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm not on Barack Obama's campaign staff, but I understand the movement that's afoot. And one of the reasons why Hillary Clinton has had such difficulty with doing what the congressman has said and that is saying that I'm here, I'm going to fix things, I'm a fighter, and so forth. That's a tremendous message. But it hasn't been able to overrun the feeling among the American people that this is a decisive moment in history to change. Now, if we take racism, we can destroy that movement and the possibilities that we could enter a new era in American history.
Professor Ron Walters, you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We actually have a little bit left to go, so hold your applause until the final thing. I did want to ask you, though, he's asked Americans to rise to the challenge, and there's this funny kind of situation where he finds himself in. One of the first questions asked about him was he black enough? In other words, did he have the civil rights credentials, that sort of thing, to bring along the old line black political establishment, which was initially very much heavily for the Clintons?
Yes.
Now the question seems to be, at least in the white community, is he too black? Is he, again, a Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, the black candidate? While in the same time, by repudiating Reverend Wright, in the black community, again, you raise the question of, well, is he black enough? Is he supporting our guy?
Right. I think that really the question is he white enough? And I think that's really what's at the bottom of it. In a country where 70% of the people are white, obviously, even if you're an African-American candidate, that's a constituency that you have to satisfy. So there is the question, really, whether or not you're white enough. That is really the question. Initially, blacks didn't know him outside of the state of Illinois. And so they were listening to cues like, well, he had a Kenyan father, Caucasian mother, raised in where?
Hawaii.
And Indonesia. These are not cues that African Americans know very much about. Alabama, Mississippi, ghetto grits. I mean, those are cues that we know something about. But here is this strange guy. So 20 points behind Hillary Clinton, that's certainly true. So the question of whether or not he was black enough was a legitimate question. He had to satisfy blacks in terms of the cultural cues. So he did that. He went to Selma. They were able to trust him. And because they were able to trust him, now his support level is at somewhere 92%.
Ron Walters, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Our broadcast today was produced by Susan Lund and David Gura. Drew Reynolds is our technical director. He got help today from Kurt Stolnicker, Neil Ellis, and Jerry Tennant. We'd also like to thank the entire team here at the museum for their hospitality. Charles Overby, CEO, Jack Hurley, and Susan Bennett, deputy directors, and Shelby Coffey, senior fellow at the museum. Also, Jim Updike, Dennis Dunbar, Tim Lawrence, and Walt Hassett on the technical side, and we thank them all. Tomorrow, writers Annie Prue and Michael Ondaatje are among our guests. Join us tomorrow on Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan, NPR News, at the museum in Washington, D.C.